Hello, friends. Today is the 3rd of June, 2011, and I'm speaking to you from Humlebæk, Denmark, where we have recently completed a 5-day Treatise on Cosmic Fire course. The last time I was able to work with you on the astrology program, on the webinars, reading through esoteric astrology, was actually more than 2 months ago. We ran into some technical problems as these webinars were not able to be heard on Mac formats. Now they can be. And so following the conference, which was intensive, and the WASAC period, and managing to get a bit sick myself, as you can probably hear, we're in a position to begin our discussions again. So let us do this, and I will try to make everything available to you in an ongoing way. Let's see, we have to... Suddenly something disappeared. This is the usual. I had it marked where we had terminated on the last occasion. We had reached page 12, and I'm going to try to prevent this microphone from being too loud. We had just finished talking about the 7 solar systems, of which our solar system is one. We have to be very careful when speaking about these 7 solar systems, because the word system is ambiguous. And it can mean a solar system like our own, but a system can also be a 7-fold system in which there are 7 major stars and many more, 7 major, like our cosmic logos. A solar system, in its generic sense, can even be a system comprised of many constellations. So this is one of those methods of occult blinding whereby the same term is used for items of different scope and on different levels. At my present level of understanding, I always think of our solar system as being superseded by the system of a cosmic logos in which the major chakras are 7 major suns or solar systems. And that would be superseded by a still greater system in which the major chakras are constellations. If you want further elaboration on this, I do think you can go to the page 293 of A Treatise on Cosmic Fire, and there you will see an elaboration of this idea, which ends finally in something called the unknown, which I think is the one about whom naught may be said when we usually talk about the one about whom naught may be said. And it is then the unknown and has constellations for its chakras. I think I can go there now. Show you what that means. Here it is. This is our solar logos, which has planetary schemes as chakras. A cosmic logos supersedes it and has solar logoi as centers. And the unknown succeeds that. And it has cosmic logoi as its centers. I think this is about as straightforward as it can get. Of course, the expanding septenaries continue. Now, let's see, we will go on. Much has been given in the occult books, of which the average astrologer remains profoundly unaware. Well, this was written in the early 1930s. I think it's still the case because it requires such deep cosmological occultism. People can't be bothered with it because they're mostly focused on personality issues. It is essential that he learn to think in larger wholes and to be more deeply concerned with the emanating sources, capital S, and with the eternal persistent causes, capital C, than with the effects of these sources upon that ephemeral creation, a human being, and his temporary existence upon a most unimportant planet. Well, this is amazing for its perspective because we tend to think we are important to ourselves, and perhaps to some of those around us. We live on an important planet, surely. It used to be the center of the universe, didn't it? We live in an important solar system, which compared with certain lives, is merely as a crystal is to the human being. So DK helps us put all this in proportion, and he's trying to take us off the center of our own stage. He's trying to take our planet off the center of its stage, even our solar system, even our local one about whom naught may be said, in whom we live and move and have our being. He's trying to take that off the center of our stage. So this is the factor of decentralization. It is not welcomed by many people because it seems to reduce them to insignificance, but it does actually, in the long run, give them a larger identity. That's also what we're looking for. So as man seeks to do this decentralizing, this looking to the causes of which we are a part, rather than focusing on the effect which we are and which makes us seem central when we are not, he will discover for himself the signs of the essential divinity in man. When that word essential is used, so often the monad is indicated, the essence, the pure being within us. A divinity which is to be found in the infinite grasp of man's consciousness when illumined by the light of the soul, light of the spiritual triad, I believe in this case, and his power to project his thought into the consciousness of those manifold lives whose energetic movements he must perforce share, because his small modicum of energy is an integral part of theirs. So we cannot divorce our consciousness or our being from those greater lives in whom we live and move and have our being. Beginning, of course, even with the globe lord of the planet Earth and the chain lord of the fourth chain and the planetary scheme itself, and on in many of those in whom, becoming ever smaller and smaller, we live and move and have our being. Whether our consciousness is infinite in its grasp, we have to carefully define the word infinite. If it means at least eventually cosmic, then it is, I think, correct. But by that time you rather wonder whether it is man's consciousness which is grasping, or that we have become something still more essential, which we always have been, and which is severed from the limitation of being a human being. Okay. There is one aspect of energy for which the modern astrologer makes very little allowance, and yet it is of paramount importance. This is the energy which emanates or radiates from the Earth itself. So really, the Earth is at the center of every horoscope. However, in order to treat it as a factor which will be conditioned by a sign, a zodiacal sign, we use the heliocentric mode, and so the Earth becomes the one heliocentric factor in a geocentric horoscope. So, above all, the Earth is influential. The various centers, energy centers on the Earth, the various continents, increasingly the various ashrams and the ray lords, the hierarchy, the ray lords, all of these on and in the planetary scheme of Earth itself. But there's no way for modern astrology, using the horoscope it does presently use, to account for these influences, and so we have to hold them in our consciousness. Living as all human beings do upon the surface of the Earth, and being therefore projected into the etheric body of the planet, for the reason that man stands erect, we are aligning, therefore, with the major meridians of the etheric body of the planet. Man's body is at all times bathed in the emanations and radiations of our Earth, and in the integral quality of our planetary logos as he sends it forth and transmits energy to his planetary environment. Above all, the influences and rays of the planetary logos condition us, that is particularly its third ray personality, its second ray soul coming into effectiveness, its first ray monad not yet occultly effective because we are not yet a sacred planet. There's something about the cross here and about how many animals are on the horizontal level or walking on four legs on that horizontal level, being the transverse arm of the cross, but we become, because we are erect, a vertical projection into that part of the etheric body which substands the actual planet, and that part of the etheric body which extends beyond the actual physical planet. We are, in some way, because of our erect posture, aligned with the will aspect of divinity and with its expression, which is mind, which has been worked up from below or has been stimulated in us by the solar angels. So we are a willful, directing agent within the etheric body of our planetary logos. There are more mysteries here, of course, but I think that question of the cross, whether man is on the vertical arm or the horizontal arm, means a great deal. Of course, in a certain respect, when you look at some of the great trees, they certainly have an immense verticality, and you wonder what that does mean within the etheric body of our planetary logos. Astrologers have always emphasized the incoming influences and energies as they beat upon and play through our little planet, but they omitted to take into adequate consideration the emanating qualities and forces, which are the contribution of our Earth's etheric body to the larger whole. And let us say, which etheric body is that? It can be the systemic etheric body of the Earth, which is part of the solar or systemic lowest plane, or it can be the cosmic ethers of our planetary logos, which work out as our planetary Buddhic, Atmic, Monadic, and Logoic vehicles on the cosmic physical plane still. So when we're talking about ethers, I think we always have to be very careful about whether we are including both ethers, both sets of ethers, both systemic and cosmic, or only one. And this is also true when speaking of Shambhala, because, you know, Shambhala is both a center which is found, represented within the systemic ethers as the white island, and yet is also represented in the four higher ethers of Buddhi, Atma, the monad, monadic sphere, and the logoic sphere. We're still very much in the introduction, just page 13. But, you know, we're dealing also with general occultism. And that's the thing about esoteric astrology. It's rather hard to understand it unless we have a pretty broad occult understanding, broad and deep, of our planetary, systemic, and cosmic environment. So it may be, you know, going a bit slow here for those who want to know, well, what's the meaning of this planet and this sign and this house from an esoteric perspective? And I will get to that, of course. I have written about a number of these more practical interpretations, not completed it, but it's on makara.us, and I've given interpretations there of planets and signs for three levels of human expression. Another point which should here be noted is that the influence of the moon is purely symbolic in nature and in effect, and is simply the result of an ancient thought form and teaching descended to us from Lemurian times, at which time we are told it was still old. It was inherited from still earlier times, and is not based upon any true radiation or influence. Well, we all know that the moon in the astrological chart works. It does work, and it does indicate important things. See, the thought forms are still with us, and the moon stands for our connection with those ancient thought forms. It also stands for the condition of our lunar vehicles, which are, in a way, inherited from that domain which we called the moon chain. And the moon had control over them at the time, and now that thought form that is still extant has control over them. The moon is a symbol of that which imprisons us in the past and in the habitual nature, but it is also a symbol for that which can be transformed, and that which is potent but veiled and must become unveiled, namely the influences of Vulcan, Neptune, and Uranus to begin with. So DK's occult assertion here is that there's no true radiation from the moon, but that it is symbolic of influences which still do exist. And perhaps in the seventh round, whether that is a chain round of the kind we are familiar with, or a scheme round, which is a larger round from chain to chain to chain, when that seventh round has occurred, the moon will have become very small, and will have entered a state of disintegration. In fact, at the conclusion of this seventh round, it will have disappeared, and the lunar influence in man will have disappeared. So you begin to wonder about the condition of the three lower worlds at that time. Will they exist at all in dense form, or will the cosmic ethers only be demonstrating? Probably they will exist, but as for the dense physical nature, which the moon so often symbolizes, you can wonder whether it will exist when the fullest of the seventh rounds has occurred, namely the seventh scheme round. In those far-off times, antedating even Lemuria and constituting in Lemurian days simply an ancient tradition, derived from the moon chain, of course, the moon appeared to be a living, vital entity. You would wonder, though, whether it was, because the transfer from the moon chain had already occurred, and certain seeds of life, including the human and Devic seeds, were Devic seeds of a higher kind, were removed, and therefore its vitality ebbed away. So it could be questioned whether even in Lemurian times, 18 million years ago, let us say, whether it was actually a vital entity at all. My thought on this is it probably was not, but that it certainly, the parts of man that it represented were certainly much more vital than they are now. But I would have you bear definitely in mind that today the moon is nothing more than a dead form. It was the vehicle of a being who we could call a globe lord, and probably in a larger sense it was the physical being of a being we could call a chain lord. The moon chain was the third chain in the Earth scheme. It no longer exists. It is now replaced by an entity we working through something called the Saturn scheme. As for the place of that emanation of the planetary logos that we called the Lord of the Moon Chain, well, necessarily it has to be with us, but is currently, as I understand it at least, manifesting through the Earth chain along with the Earth chain Lord. And so two types of lives, and maybe two types of supervising deities, are active through our present Earth chain. And there is therefore quite a disturbance between the old pattern generated on the moon chain, which is in serious need of redemption, and the newer pattern with which the Earth chain Lord is attempting to express. We have a duality going on within our Earth chain. It's as if the moon chain Lord has lost his home, has lost his vehicle of expression, and is being given shelter by a neighbor who says, come and live with me. The neighbor discovers, though, that the new guest brings some liabilities which have to be sorted out. But all of this is under the evolution of the planetary logos, and this sorting out is a necessity. So there's a very big redemptive aspect going on the Earth chain at the present time, trying to recover from the planetary logos' failure through the moon chain Lord in a much earlier time, an earlier Manvantara, in a way. Manvantaras having variable durations, depending on which kind you mean. So anyway, this moon, it has no emanation and no radiation of any kind, and therefore no effect of any kind. But HPB told us there was a kind of effluvia, which would be an outflow of the kind given off by a decaying body. You know, noxious effects of that decaying body. It's not really then a radiation at all. It's kind of a, it's not really an emanation, but it is an outflowing effect of disintegration. Outflowing effect of disintegration. Yes. The moon, from the angle of the esoteric knower, is simply an obstruction in space. And now, you know, we, the members of the Black Lodge and those who come under their influence are called often the forces of obstruction. And we learn in A Treatise in White Magic that the moon is much associated with those forces, and that lunar magic is not at all the kind in which we should be indulging, or to which we should be giving our attention. So the forces of obstruction, the moon as an obstruction, we consider this in our horoscope, and we try to find out the specific ways in which that obstruction, our habit nature based upon the past, is at work. An undesirable form which must someday disappear. As undesirable as it would be to have a decaying body in the room in which you lived. Pretty obnoxious, and I think the effects would be similar. It could make you sick. It could make you nauseated. It would distort the destroy the life forces within you at the moment. We have to get rid of this decaying body in space. But of course, that's in the timing of our planetary logos and in the timing of our solar logos. We, humanity, are not about to do it. In esoteric astrology, the effect of the moon is known as a thought effect, and as the result of a powerful, most ancient thought form. Well, thought forms are extremely effective. Even the major influence of the zodiac, as it affects those on Earth, the zodiac of signs, is due to thought forms which the hierarchy established in Atlantean days. So let us not sell short the effectiveness of a thought effect. And to the degree that we are attuned with that cyclic effect, we are under some ancient rhythms from which we must break free. Nevertheless, the moon has no quality of her own and can transmit nothing to Earth. Well, the soul is the quality of life. And we would say that the soul principle of the moon has been removed. At the time that it was an active chain lord, expression of a chain lord, the soul aspect was present. Now just the very lowest energies, which are resonant to the third aspect energies of the previous solar system, that is all that remains. I think that we have to think that there will be residual effects on the emotional plane, perhaps residual effects on the lower mental plane. The moon is a dead form. It has no emanation at all. Now, an emanation is not an effluvium. An emanation is a deliberate outpouring of energy and quality on behalf of the informing life. But an effluvium, or the plural effluvia, has all to do with the degeneration of a body in noxious fumes, which then affect the environment. So let me put this down, not an effluvium. And that is why the moon is spoken of in the ancient teachings as veiling either Vulcan or Uranus, because everyone has noticed that there are effects coming apparently from the moon and from the position in which the moon finds itself. Now, as DK elaborates the teaching, we find that the ancient teaching should include Neptune, apparently, because the moon can veil Neptune as well as Vulcan or Uranus. So let us include Neptune. But we will read carefully what he has to say when he does mention Neptune in relation to the moon. This hint or inference has always been here, and astrologers would do well to experiment with this suggestion. I have made anent the moon, and instead of working with the moon, per se, let them work with Vulcan when dealing with undeveloped or average man, and with Uranus when considering highly developed man. But there are some in the middle who are more aspirational and perhaps on the probationary path, and who are not yet highly developed. And for them, I would suggest let us use Neptune. Because certainly the moon does have its strong emotional content. As a matter of fact, that seems to be one of its foremost effects. They would find some interesting and convincing results eventuating. So, you know, Vulcan represents the physical vehicle and its rhythmic instinctual density, and Uranus represents the mental currents and their possibility of being illumined by flashes of intuition. And in that respect, when we would use the moon position in relation to the sun position for Vulcan, now Vulcan may be in the same sign as the sun, or if the sun is near the beginning or ending of a sign, Vulcan can be in an adjoining sign, so we're not certain about that, though people have their theories about how to find Vulcan, but in general, the sun position is where Vulcan would be found. So we would link the moon position to the sun position, and when we read the moon, we would read the influences upon the physical body, and perhaps some of the astral body for the less developed human being, especially for the undeveloped types. For those we know who are really highly developed, we would link the moon position to the Uranus position, and we would read something of the Uranian nature in that moon position, and we would think of it as affecting the at least the lower mental body. We might also think of it as affecting the etheric body, because Uranus is a planet much associated with the electrical manifestation of the etheric body. We will have to experiment, and we will have to see what does the moon position tell us about the particular vehicle in which the human being is polarized at the time. Now, many of us who are studying these materials, we are polarized in the mental vehicle. And, you know, generally the DK material repulses those who are wanting the purely mystical approach. So Uranus would be a right reading for the moon, and we would see what is the moon's relation to Uranus and which particular position, either that of Uranus or that of the moon, told us more about Uranian function and lower mental function within our etheric body, within our personality, and the possibilities of transformation. Always remember that when reading the moon, the possibility of transforming and elevating the lunar nature is with us, and the method of so doing should be hidden by the moon, its position, its aspects, and by the planet which it veils. We all are in need of transforming our personal apparatus, elevating it, transmuting it, we might say, because Uranus is the planet of transmutation, and would therefore work to purify the matter of which, let us say, the mental vehicle was composed, and would elevate its frequency. It would help to get rid of the dirt and the particles that don't belong. It would free up the vibrations of the vehicle. It would elevate the vibrations of the vehicle. So remember the transformative potentials of the that the moon position indicates. Now, moving ahead, students would also do well to remember that the 12 constellations which constitute our particular zodiac are themselves recipients of many streams of energy coming to them from many sources. Now, sometimes DK will refer to constellations as the zodiac as constellations, sometimes as signs. There is a zodiac of signs and a zodiac of constellations. Both of them are recipients, but of different types of energy, I would say. The zodiac of constellations receiving the more powerful energies. Now let us bear in mind, we would refer to a reference in the rays and the initiations, that the zodiac of constellations is the 12-petaled major head center in that greater supercosmic logos, which is called, we name it by a peculiar name, the one about whom naught may be said. So these are major petals, major chakras. You basically have to look at the head chakras of man in his own 12-petaled supracranial lotus and have to say which are more powerful. Are his normal chakras more powerful, more influential, or are the petals in that highest head center more powerful, and the highest part of the highest head center? So one can think of many cosmic streams flowing into these higher, into the highest of the head centers of the supercosmic logos, the one about whom naught may be said. Some of these cosmic sources may be certain constellations such as the Great Bear, the Pleiades, Orion, Draco, our own local system of stars, which would appear to us as a constellation if we had a different perspective upon it. That would include Sirius, our Sun, Alpha Centauri, Beta Centauri, Procyon, perhaps Altair, perhaps Vega. The last word is not in on all of those suns that would be included in our own local constellation in which we play a part. We certainly are constellated. We are certainly part of a cosmic logos, but exactly what it is, we must remain open to debate the issue. So anyway, great energies are pouring into this highest of all head centers of the one about whom naught may be said. Energies are also pouring into the zodiac of signs, which are like orange sections surrounding the earth, which Alan Leo called loons, L-U-N-E-S. Alan Leo, in his amazingly prescient book, Esoteric Astrology, written some 15 years before the Tibetan wrote his book, and filled with theosophical correlations. I believe it was written around, or published in 1917. Those who know exactly can correct me on that point. So, planetary energies come into the zodiac of signs, solar energies, and also some of the zodiacal energies themselves. So there is much to straighten out between the signs and the constellations. DK has a marvelous statement, if I can find it. It has to do with the constellations as galaxies of stars. Here it is. This is page 621 of Esoteric Astrology. In the understanding of the significance of the distinction between the constellations as galaxies of stars and the signs as concentrated influences, presumably of those galaxies, which are not really galaxies, they're simply aggregations of stars. They're not galaxies as we call galaxies today. The signs as concentrated influences of those galaxies will come fresh light upon the science of astrology. And then he goes on to say, this is fundamentally connected with the difference between the relation of a ray energy to the triangle of constellations and the human relation. The human relation is a much lower level, much more attenuated relation. More I cannot say, I may not say, he says, but this will give a hint to the intuitive astrologer. So, as we are reading through this book and giving ourselves plenty of time to think of these things, when we reach page 621, we will come back to this subject in a fresh way. But just to repeat it, in the understanding of the significance of the distinction between the constellation as galaxies of stars, they are the stellar gods, and as signs, as Devic representatives through which the power of the stellar influences can be concentrated for the absorption of the earth, will come fresh light upon the science of astrology. It's as if the human being corresponds to the earth in a way, and the a lower level of reception. Although I do believe that the earth per se, as a being, receives energies from the constellations per se, and that sidereal astrology in a planetary sense does apply. But when it comes to the human being, and not the planet as a whole, then the tropical zodiac has the effect of concentrating the stellar influences for the immediate use of those lesser beings in the kingdoms of nature, especially the lower kingdoms like those of man and below, upon the planet. So, in the zodiac, energies are received. And they are transmitted in two ways, either in the cosmic sense or in the systemic planetary sense. These energies, many streams of, blend and fuse with the energy of any particular constellation and, transmuted and occultly refined, eventually find their way into the solar system. Let me re-speak that. It's the greater energies which blend and fuse with the energy of any particular zodiacal sign constellation and are thereby transmuted and occultly refined for Earth purposes, and they find their way into our solar system. It's even been speculated that the sun itself has a zodiac of signs, just like the Earth does, and that this zodiac of signs, which is Devic in nature, is for the purpose of transmuting and occultly refining these greater constellational energies. Anyway, these energies find their way into our solar system, whether through the zodiac of signs around the sun, and perhaps from there to the zodiac of signs around our Earth, and from there for the availability of human beings and other units of life on our planet. This is quite an intricate study. He takes it up again in the 600s of the book, and again he doesn't say everything. He leaves much to our interpretation. Let's just say that transformation, transmutation, a stepping down of very, very powerful solar, very powerful cosmic energies is absolutely necessary if they are to be used in our solar system and our planet. Just think how careful even Shambhala has to be of even the slightest touch of the planet and humanity. The power that touches and then withdraws. How much more so for these greater cosmic entities that are greater by far than our solar logos and yet are seeking to influence him and his planets. I would like to call attention at this point to some comments I made in a treatise on cosmic fire, which are apposite and helpful. I am somewhat paraphrasing, he says. Astrology is concerned with the effect produced in the substance of the sheaths by the influences, vibrations, etc., of the various planets. Well, certainly, yes, planets and other factors. These are esoterically the influences of the solar centers. By that we would mean, again, chakras. And each planet represents a solar chakra. And perhaps they occur in triangles in relation to each chakra, with revolutions, with revolution in the triangle, so that now one and now another of the planets takes up the major chakric influence. Well, that's a whole theory in itself. It may not be worth getting into immediately, but we've been able to work out pretty much which planets stand for which chakras in the solar logos, and there are some ambiguous cases and some movement, just the way there is with any human unit as he moves up and takes different posts within a group in which he may be participating. Eventually, toward the latter part of the solar system, and some would say even now, our Earth will represent or does represent the base of the spine center in our solar logos. So when we have these influences and vibrations from the various planets, it's as if the solar chakras are playing upon us and upon all that they influence. The forces emanating from the solar chakras, that is, the planetary schemes, upon the planetary centers. Now, the different ways of looking at planetary centers. From one perspective, the hierarchy is a planetary heart center, Shambhala, planetary head center, humanity, planetary throat center, and other assignments are made. Also, major cities are as if they were planetary centers. Major continents are as well, at least in those three different ways. Kingdoms of nature, continents, major cities, they're all considered planetary centers. We'll have to study the context. But the forces emanating from the solar centers play upon the planetary centers. There is some ellipsis there. Maybe DK gave more and excised it from the book. This is hidden in the karma of the heavenly man. The term heavenly man and planetary logos are so frequently used interchangeably, and our heavenly man planetary logos has a particular karma in relation to the development of personality, per se. Exactly what that means we do not know, but we can see that there are issues of dealing, or which make it necessary to deal with great elemental lives which have not been fully brought under control, because after all, our planetary logos is not yet a cosmic initiate of the second degree, even. When true esoteric astrology comes into being, more anent this will be given. You rather wonder whether we're going to have to wait another 800 or more years until we enter the Mercurian decanate of Aquarius before the really true esoteric astrology comes into being, or whether what DK gives in his next installment in 2025 or immediately following will be sufficient to launch us into the true esoteric astrology. It's better to take the path of humility here and act as if we know very little, because indeed we do, and then our knowledge will gradually and properly build, accrue, and we will find ourselves more and more illuminated on the deeper aspects of astrology. Astrological students are today only learning the ABC of this stupendous subject, and are occupied with the exoteric fringes of that great veil. Well, we've hardly even lifted the veil. We haven't. That great veil which has been thrown wisely over planetary lore. Of course, mythology itself is a great veil. The symbolic legends do conceal much and reveal much. So the story goes they've been purposely jumbled by the Black Lodge at different times of history to mislead us. But we are slowly, I think, raising that veil a little bit, and it will take ages, decades, centuries, eventually ages, to do that. The astrology of 10,000 years from now is not what we have at the present time. There is a great internal astrological department, possessed of amazing wisdom, of a planetary, systemic, and even cosmic kind. We are slowly making our way towards that. So, we're interested in this interplay of forces. We're interested in going beyond the exoteric fringes. And we're interested in slowly, carefully, and clearly lifting the veil, somewhat penetrating the veil, not only upon the planetary lore. Just think, we don't even have the planetary lore. We have to deal with the systemic lore, the lore which points outwardly towards cosmic factors, such as the not only the signs of the zodiac, the constellations of the zodiac, but the various associated constellations, and with some truly great constellations, perhaps greater even than our zodiacal constellations. So if the veil is dropped upon the planetary lore, we can be sure it's well dropped upon those others. Well, okay, now we're kind of warming up here a little. We have a little, I would suggest that I get this out to you. I'm trying to keep these in increments of about an hour. So let us together sound the great invocation, which is the greatest tool we have for invoking the reappearance of the Christ, the world teacher, the one who will help us bring about such a condition in our civilization that this occult knowledge can take its true and proper place in illuminating the mind and consciousness of humanity. So we will, I'm sure you know the great invocation, but we do it together. Begin with an Om. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out, and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. Okay, friends, we will go on step by step, paragraph by paragraph, thinking as we go, correlating as we go. It's not an outlined, systematic presentation of esoteric astrology, but what it does do is take up what the Tibetan said and correlates it with what he has said in many other places. and hopefully giving us quite a voluminous picture as the months and years go by of the deeper aspects of this great subject and how it correlates with the cosmological teaching and how it correlates with the many other teachings which DK has given. Probably, you know, I'd like to be able to talk many books. I don't know if it'll be possible, but in this speaking, correlative speaking on esoteric astrology, I will probably be able to bring in many related factors and the relationships under the planet Mercury will produce that arcing of light which will eventually lead to a synthetic field of unitive, intuitive knowledge. Okay, I think this is the sixth of these esoteric astrology adventures. I hope you haven't lost count here. And we will proceed with number 7 as soon as I can. See you then.